Hello there, everybody, and welcome to this week's official EFL podcast. Another bumper edition coming your way. Co-host for this week's episode is a wonderful colleague of mine from Sky Sports.
You prepare for everything. You can't prepare for football. If you like, you don't know what's going
to
happen.
And the manager joins us from a side ploughing its way to the very summit of the Sky Bet Championship.
We're enjoying the step up, but it certainly is one. And we're under no illusions about the challenges ahead, but you know, we're really enjoying it at the moment.
Also this week, we get John Coleman taking on the now infamous 72-72. It's the official EFL podcast. Okay then, our first guest this week on the official EFL podcast. I say guest, he's a co-host. He's going to help me later on talk to the Ipswich Town manager, Kieran McKenna. The Tractor Boy is absolutely flying in the Championship. And this man is permanently flying with his commentary across the Sky Sports Network and across the world, if you're lucky enough to be able to tune in overseas. It is Gary Weaver. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, my friend?
Pruts, I'm okay. I'm just admiring your quiff as usual, which is outstanding today. Outstanding. I was going to say, mate, do you want me to do this in my normal Anfield Scouse accent? Or
well,
this
is part of kind of pulling the curtain back on what makes great commentators, the different gears that they can go through and the different voices they can put on. Because as we've discussed before, when I first met you both pre and post game, I was thinking that I was talking to somebody completely different. But that is your big boy broadcasting voice. So anywhere in between is absolutely fine with me.
Okay, let's do it. I was told at school I wouldn't do this job because of my accent, but, 17-year-olds, people that come from poor areas where I'm from and talk like you won't make it. So some would say it's still not being a commentator yet, but, you know, I'll try my best.
I think that's the best place to start. That motivational point that you just made, that if you put your mind to it, don't listen to the doubters and crack on. That's a wonderful place to start. Anyway, let's get stuck into the football, shall we? Enough of this badinage pre-kickoff. The weekend saw you down at Home Park, Plymouth Argyle. Tell me what Plymouth Argyle is like now it's back in the Championship as an entity, as a crowd, and what you saw firsthand for them against one of the favourites for a promotion in Southampton.
Got to say, I always love going there. I know I say that about everywhere I go. Fantastic place to go, but there's even more of a buzz about the place now, as you'd imagine. I think they showed at the weekend they can mix it with the big boys, and that's the thing that Stephen Schumacher wants his players to believe, that they can do it against the top-end teams. And we saw them give Southampton a run for the money, didn't we, at the weekend. Could easily have caved when they went one down, hit back within 2 minutes, Ryan Hardy scoring. Obviously lost it late on. But no, the buzz around that place. I probably stayed longer than I should have done, to stay for 3 nights. Because I love it down there. I paid for 2 myself, by the way, just in case anyone's asking. But no, even the owner said, are you still here? I was at Simon Hallett. I went, yeah. He was like, come down the pub. I'll meet you at one of the pubs. But it's just a great vibe down there anyway on match days. It reminds me a bit of like, you know, when you go to Newcastle on a match day and there's a great vibe around the city. Plymouth's like that. And the amount of green shirts you see around the city now compared to what you used to see when they were in League 2, for example, is amazing.
The vibe and the kind of consensus that we're hearing of this phrase, Plymouth Argyle will be all right, I get the sense you know, and Stephen Schumacher like you do, knowing the hierarchy there like you do. Yes, that's a first block call, consolidation, but there's something rumbling there, isn't there? The ambition you can feel.
Yeah, and you heard Don say during the game, I think it was after the final whistle, Don said, I think Plymouth Argyle will finish top half. And then we put the mics down. He said, that was a bit bold for me there, wasn't it? I thought, well, no, because that's clearly what you believe. But yeah, Stevens, he wants them to attack the Championship, play the same way they did in League One. Their budget last season was 14th in League One, so they outperformed that. They've tripled it this season, but they still reckon bottom four in the Championship. He's playing 4-3-3, as we saw, because he saw Burnley play that last season, and he saw teams that gave Plymouth Argyle a tough time last season playing 4-3-3. And he went to see Ange Postecoglou, then Celtic manager, after an Old Firm game, about playing 4-3-3. So he thinks that system will work for them this season, and hopefully that for themselves, that they stay out of trouble. And like I say, they gave Southampton a game.
It was a wonderful game to watch. And as you say, the atmosphere was there. It's always nice when the weather's slightly better for you guys up there on the country, as we're back in the studio eating biscuits and drinking lots of coffee. moving on to another couple of teams that we would both say have started brightly. Hull City, with Liam Rossini in charge, sat in seventh.
Yeah.
Birmingham City, fourth, unbeaten. Yeah. Obviously, all the headlines about Tom Brady, but it's good work by John Eustace. Good, solid, quiet, understated work, isn't it?
Yeah. understated is right. You know, he's he likes to go under the radar, John Eustace. You've obviously spoken to him. I've spoken to him many times. He's very highly rated as a coach, as a manager. The thing about Birmingham is, Pruts, the last couple of seasons, I've done a game there early on, and they've looked all right. And you think, they'll have a go this season. Then they've dropped off. Again, last season, I think they beat QPR when I did them. And you thought, they'll have a go this season. And then they drop off. But there's a different feel around the place, I think, now. The ownership's sorted. The permanent players have come in to replace the loan players. The average age of the group has dropped. Obviously, Christian Bielik there. Ivan Sunjic, who's come back from being relegated with Hertha Berlin, you're thinking he's out the door. Mm-hmm. He's come back and started magnificently for Birmingham. But yeah, it's, as I say, John Eustace, he doesn't like the limelight, does he? He likes his players to take care of business. And he can't switch off there because he's from Sutton Coldfield, isn't he? So his family, he's got a family of Blues and a family of Villa fans. And his mates are Blues and Villa. And he cannot switch off. That's the only downside.
No escape
for him, I think,
whatsoever
in that job.
There is,
no.
John. Moving on to Hull City, you talk about the ownership. There was a certain way that Hull City were going about their business, going about their day-to-day existence. Things have changed. We saw Liam Rossini, a friend of ours both, and a colleague.
Yes.
Who's gone back in.
Although he did change his number.
He did.
But we hunted him down.
Hey, that's the thing. If you do get a job, we've got special ways of finding you. We will hunt you down to get those numbers.
Don't change
back.
Your number.
But his first pot of call last season, statistically, was shoring them up at the back, wasn't it? We saw them in many games where they were in games, but they were lacking a cutting edge. Now, that first week of the season seems to have kind of been flipped on its head for Hull City. And given where they are now, what you've seen from them, what you're reading about them, Gary, is this a season where, if you're a Tigers fan, you suddenly start thinking, well, no, it's not about just survival. Let's see where we can end up at the top end of the table.
Well, they have to do more than just survive, don't they? And I think the momentum's there, isn't it, Pruts? It's obviously a place you know well. Something like 20,000 there for the Sheffield Wednesday game. They got 15,000 memberships, so there's good momentum there. And the owner has backed Liam, hasn't he? He's brought in Aaron Connolly, who's looked sharp. Liam Delap's there as well. Scott Twine, you can bang them in from distance, as we know we've seen before. And you're right, Liam had to tighten them up defensively. I think after the World Cup last season, I think they had the second or third best championship defensive record heading into springtime. So Liam, look, you know what he's like. He'll create an identity, a DNA. You know, I know he does the 10v10 on a shortened pitch, doesn't he, in training? So players have to try and find a way out of that. And I love Liam. I absolutely love talking to him about the game. And, you know, he gives you clarity to us when we're talking to him, and also to his players for each position. And he was always destined to be a manager, wasn't he? I remember his dad, Leroy, told him as a kid, draw me a picture of what you want to be. I think he was only 10. And he drew a picture of himself managing in a dugout.
No.
So he's always wanted to be a manager, Liam. Yeah. And when he was injured, I think Brighton used to watch games from the mouth of the tunnel so he could get a manager's view of the matches rather than sitting up in the stand with the rest of the injured players. So it's always been his destiny. But yeah, I think Hull, they definitely need to do more than survive. And Liam knows that. I'm the owner,
the
obviously.
The pitch that I drew, incidentally, was me launching a winger into the fourth row of Glanford Park, which then subsequently happened.
I was going to say on a regular basis.
Or just a pitch of a referee brandishing a yellow card.
I didn't want to mention officials. I didn't want to. The first thought I had was it you and an assistant referee arguing.
And we're now best of friends, myself and Alan Welling.
Excellent.
Speaking of best buddies, we're going to get Kieran McKenna on in just a short while on the podcast. But we'll save all of our Ipswich top of the table chat for them, because my word, they are flying. And talk about a team that's well backed. The Tractor Boys are there and loud and proud. We'll come to them in due course. League One is where we're going to head to next. And there's a real varsity feel to the top end, isn't it? Given the fact of where Cambridge United find themselves and Oxford United find themselves. Cambridge, so far, they avoided relegation, of course, on the final day of last season. And under Mark Bonner, who, let's be honest, if you want someone that knows the place inside and out, the city, the different places of management within the structure of the football club, he's your absolute man. And Liam Manning, the job that he's doing at Oxford, in conjunction with Ed Waldron, the head of recruitment. Two teams that are synonymous, and apologies to both sets of fans here. The lazy take on it is they're synonymous for places of, for scholars and places of education.
Go on.
But right now in League One, two teams doing very well indeed. Let's start with Cambridge.
Well, Liam Manning, I mean, if you think about his time at MK Dons, he left with a 50%. Win rate?
Yes.
It wasn't too bad, was it? Got them into third. Obviously, then they struggled and he left. And Oxford always wanted a clear identity. We saw that with Carl Robinson. And obviously, they've gone for Liam as well and his style of football. And the fact that some astute signings, I think, there. Pruts, Mark Harris from Cardiff City. scored three goals already this season. He's a good finisher, Mark Harris. I know there were a few in Cardiff who were a bit surprised that he went out, really. Stanley Mills, Danny's boy, who's, you know, direct.
Evertonian.
Made his, made his full Football League debut. And they got, in Liam, they've got a manager that will back them, that will give the young players confidence. So I think with Oxford, obviously, there's talk of a new stadium, potentially in the pipeline as well. So there's a good feel around that place. And I think with Liam, we'll probably say the same with Kieran later. You think they're new, and they are new to management, but they've had years and years of coaching, of coaching. So he was doing academy coaching at Ipswich and West Ham and New York City, and then head coach at Lommel, so in the City Group, Lommel in Belgium. So, you know, he's getting his chance at Oxford. And I think he was probably, you could say he was unlucky to lose his job at MK Dons. I know it was a big decision from Pete Winkleman at the time. But yeah, he's flying with Oxford.
And from Matt Bonner's point of view, what's I mean, it sounds a little bit redundant to say this. I mean, to say what's gone better. I mean, everything's gone fundamentally better, hasn't it, this season so far?
Yeah.
But he's not getting carried away, is he? He's not getting carried away.
No. Never does, does he? Never does. But you probably look at the back end of last season. Somehow they survived. And they picked up right at the end of the season. I know they needed a few favours, didn't they, on the final day to stay up. And they've had the summer in between, but it's almost like they've carried on. They've kept that momentum. A bit more robust this season, I think. But yeah, it's almost like they've carried on from what they achieved last season. They've looked at last season and we don't want to go anywhere near that again. And they know they had to make a quick start this season to make sure they try and put a buffer between themselves and the relegation places so they don't get involved in that again. But it's early days, but they can't do much better than they've done so far.
I suppose a nice buffer would be about 19 to 20 places. So if they maintain that, that'd be wonderful. So kudos to both Liam and Mark. So far, so good this season. Another team that had it all to do, of course, coming into this campaign was a Wigan Athletic side with a points deduction. Now they've gone through the gears and to get themselves back into the point-based black, if you will, with a comprehensive win against Bolton Wanderers 4-0 last time out. Very emphatic, done from the point of view of bringing the club together, the fan base together, a great way of doing it. And under Sean Maloney, that talismanic presence that we saw him go in, we wondered what we were going to get from Wigan Athletic with Sean at the helm. They've got themselves into a position where they can now only look forward. Is that the kind of case? Is that their mission now, Gary, to just keep looking forward one step ahead?
Well, he won't get carried away either. Sean Maloney never does. You know, he's had a few ups and downs in his managerial career, hasn't he already? I think he knew what was potentially coming when he took the job. They targeted six games this season, didn't they, to get the plus points, and they've done it in four, so they're ahead of schedule. But yeah, I mean, now they've done that, if you think about it, that's already gone. Those points, that point deduction, it's gone already in the opening weeks, not even out of August. So we'll use that as a motivation to say, look, we've done this. They've won a big game, a big, big derby against Bolton. Charlie Wyke scoring goals. You can only think that the feeling around the place is positive. And he's that kind of character, Sean Maloney. Again, we talk about John Eustace, understated. Sean's the same, but he has a very clear idea of the way he wants to play. And the fact that they've already wiped out that points deduction can only be a
onwards
positive.
And upwards, hopefully, for the Latics. Right, League 2, Wrexham 5, Swindon Town 5.
Has that game finished?
I think
finished,
they've just finished. Now, I've been very conscious on our wonderful little podcast that we do every week to not simplify League 2 as everybody talking about Wrexham and the others. But I was looking ahead of the game at the weekend thinking, it'll be absolutely fine, we'll get onto something before we get onto Wrexham, or maybe not even mention Wrexham. And then I looked at the scores at the end of the game and it was 5-5. First off, Gary, in your position as a commentator, have you any experience on commentating on anything just as bonkers as that?
5-5. I remember Swindon Sheffield, you had a 5-5 in the playoffs, didn't he? But my good friend Daniel Mann, the boy man, he did that one. I did Newcastle 4, Arsenal 4 in the Premier League a few years ago when Arsenal were 4 up. Could have been 5 up. And then Newcastle, I mean, the late Cech Tiote slammed that goal in to make it 4-4. I remember, and this happens quite often, my co-com was Davey Proven. And if there's a gap, it's because we're looking at each other, mouthing stuff as if to say, oh my God. And then, of course, the big one last season was Sheffield Wednesday, Peterborough. Different kind of, obviously, game. Wednesday were four down from the first leg in the playoff semi-final. And then when Liam Palmer again scored that fourth to take into extra time in the last minute, again, I looked at Don. I've got to stop doing it. I looked at Don and went, oh. And I thought, hang on, who scored? Oh, Liam. Right. It's incredible because, you know, I saw Stowley on your podcast last week and he's absolutely right. You prepare for everything, but you can't prepare for football. If you like, you can't, you don't know what's going to happen. And those games will always stick in my memory. It was the Champions League one where I did on site in Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund against Malaga, where Dortmund scored two in the final minute to go through. And Jurgen Klopp was going absolutely, he couldn't believe it down below us, and the atmosphere was brilliant. But yeah, they will live with you, and you hope the right words come out. Very often they don't, but you try.
But I think that's the wonderful thing, and forgive me, but being the host of this, I can blow as much smoke wherever I need to blow. But and I think, as I've always said, because you were the very first commentator I had the pleasure of working with for Sky Sports.
We did the game, didn't we?
We did, and that'll be nearly 10 years ago now, which probably makes us both feel horrendously old.
I sent you in presenting. I sent
you did. Get me off that gantry. It's way too cold. It's way too complicated. Get me sat in the nice. But what I'd like people to know, and when they're listening to this, and hopefully there's any budding commentators, especially doors that are opening left, right, and centre in the current broadcasting world, is you've got to maintain that passion for it, and that obviously comes to when you're talking. The skill, as you say, is knowing what to say, when to say it, and also we can hear it a mile off when it's premeditated. This skill of being able to knit it together naturally is one that comes very, very shining, like a light beaming out of yourself, Gary Weaver. So I can say that.
Thank you very much. I wouldn't say that, but thank you very much, Bruce. But yeah, it's a lot of football. I think people forget sometimes. We're football fans. I've got my football team that I support. I wouldn't say who it is, but it's clearly someone from Liverpool. Or
let's just say you're a glutton for punishment. So make up your mind which side of the city that he lands on.
Prescott Cables. Carry on.
But that's like you say, that, and speaking of that, about that passion and that love of football, we're talking about how good the Wrexham Swindon game is. Alas, it's also seen somebody off, hasn't it? I don't know whether it's a direct result of that, but
Ben Foster has retired. I mean, it was a great story at the end of last season, wasn't it, for Ben, the penalty save against Notts County. But he's been honest, hasn't he? He said, look, I'm conceding goals and I'm standing there on the pitch thinking, how's that gone in past me? And he's probably being true to himself, true to the club, unless he's doing a Neil Warnock who has more comebacks than the Spice Girls. And he'll be back next week, Ben. I don't know. But, I suppose he's there thinking these goals are flying in. It's been a great story. I've had a great opportunity here. But and he's being respectful to the club as well, isn't he? If he feels he can't do it now, then I suppose he has to walk away. But he's a great person. I've spoken to Ben Foster a few times when he was at Watford, most notably. He's just a fantastic character, very honest. So he's just decided that was it.
Yeah. and we of course wish Ben all the very best. And I mean, you can keep across him on various platforms and social media, because my word, that man is busy. Back to your DMs either. That's a different thing. just to round off, Lee, too, it'd be remiss of us not to mention Neil Harris and Gillingham. We talk about teams flying. Yeah. We're going to talk to Kieran McKenna in just a second, another team that's doing very well in their specific division. But so far, so good for Gillingham and Neil Harris.
I was there when they got relegated. It was the season before last. I don't remember if you remember the game. Gillingham went down, Rotherham went up on the same match, which is always difficult, I'd imagine, for fans to take. But yeah, I think Neil, Paul Scally was the owner then. I remember talking to him on the morning of that game, and he said, look, I've had enough of owning the football club. Everyone's getting on my case, but no one's there to buy it. And obviously they have now since being bought, and there's a different feel around the place now. And that's down to Neil and the players. They beat Southampton in the Cup, didn't they?
They did
indeed. In the Carabao Cup as well. To get something like, I think, 4,000 season tickets, which is a new one for them. There's a good feel around that place.
Great feel around the place, great feel around this podcast as well. More coming your way, Gary. So far, so good, my friend. Right then, I've given Gary Weaver a part of this podcast off, which means one thing and one thing only. It's time for 72 in 72. And this week's participant is Accrington Stanley manager, John Coleman.
Hi, I'm John Coleman, Accrington Stanley. And this is the 72 in 72. Southampton, Leicester, Leeds, Carlisle, Hull, Norwich, Notts County, Harrogate, Bradford, Barrow, Accrington, Notts County, Preston, West Brom, Huddersfield, Stevenage. Derby. Sunderland. Coventry. Salford. Stockport. Reading. Hartlepool. Hartlepool, I don't know. Crewe. Ipswich. Peterborough. Portsmouth. Plymouth.
Right then, a very impressive score there from Mr. Coleman. That puts him top of the table. I'm just doing my maths here. Albeit in the early part of the season, John Coleman on top with a score of 26, just ahead of Mark Albrighton with 24. Last week, Gary Rowett scored 18. And bringing up the rate from week one, it's Stuart Dallas with 17. Anyway, Gary Weaver, I've bored you enough with that. That's me getting people up to date with 72 in 72. But I tell you what we've got now. It's an absolute treat to welcome this guest along. I had the pleasure of speaking to him last season at length down at the training ground in Suffolk. They've since gone on to do very, very good things in getting promoted into the Championship and settling back very well indeed. It's Ipswich Town boss Kieran McKenna, the league leaders, going very well indeed. Kieran, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on. A very straightforward take on Ipswich Town so far this season is, so far so good, mate.
Yeah, if only it was as simple and straightforward as that sounds. Yeah, we've of course happy with the start we've had to get three wins and to win in the cup. Of course, we certainly would have took that, but I think the reality is, yeah, we felt the size of the step up. The games have all been really challenging. We're learning a lot each day. We're learning a lot each game, and we're enjoying the step up. But it certainly is one, and yeah, we're under no illusions about the challenges ahead. But you know, we're really enjoying it at the moment.
Kieran, I was commentating on Plymouth Argyle against Southampton at the weekend, spoke to Stephen Schumacher and said, you know, have you found anything that you've had to play any differently so far? Do you need to play any differently with the step up? How have you found it so far? Are you still trying to play the same way as you did to get out of League One, or have you had to change things slightly in the opening weeks?
No, look, we're still trying to keep the same intent as what we had. We want to be really brave on and off the ball. We want to you know, build our way bravely with the ball and build through the pitch and turn that into really exciting attacking football. And we want to press high and try and win the ball back as fast as possible. But, you know, we've had moments of each game where we've certainly done that really well. I think the Stoke game at home, we've done that for the large majority of the game. But also the reality of the division and the step up for our players is that, you know, we're not going to be the dominant team for every moment of every game, and you know, that's something that we were well aware of. We worked pre-season on, you know, the different phases and how we would have to defend, you know, compact at times, and when we have to defend deep, how we can still be aggressive, how we can still get pressure on the ball, and how we can, you know, have a big counter-attacking threat. So yeah, our intent is as it was last season, to be the dominant team, and I think we will be more dominant stylistically, you know, as time goes on in this division. But certainly in the first three games, there's certainly been periods where we've had to show different elements to our games, not just from a tactical point of view, but also from a mental point of view, knowing that we're not always going to feel like the dominant team in games, and we have to control the game without the ball at times. And we can also, you know, do that very well and show that we can be a good counter-attacking team in moments. And yeah, I think it's a much more rounded challenge for us than last year, where, you know, a lot of the games was us trying to break down the opponent. And that's a challenge that the players are enjoying and I'm enjoying, you know, trying to find different ways to perform every week, to maintain our style, but also to, most importantly, try and pick up points.
It sounds, Kieran, when you do talk about that, and as I said, I've had the pleasure of coming down and bugging the life out of you for a couple of hours down at the training ground. Yeah. The fascination and the I've mentioned it to Gary earlier on the podcast about the passion you have for what you do. It's so very self-evident at that cutting edge that you've got that, but that is allied, as you say, to the pragmatism of, it's all well and good being able to do that in separate ways, but point to the main thing. Where on that kind of scale do those two meet up? Is the most important thing points on the board and places in the division?
I think everything is context dependent, isn't it? Probably important to say first and foremost, anything we do in terms of playing style is always going to be what I think is the most productive way to win games. So we try and play bravely with and without the ball, because that's our best way to win games. I believe that, and the players believe that. So I think that's our start point. Beyond that, I think, yeah, it probably depends where you are in the division. Of course, last season, we really wanted to get promoted. There's a, certainly not an expectation, but there's the, that's a clear goal. And I think we had the, the capability to go and do it. So, the absolute overriding priority, of course, is trying to pick up every point that you can. Of course, that's the same this year, but also we know that there's at the moment bigger squads and teams and players reputationally in the division than what we have. And we want to fight for as many points as we can. We're not ruling anything out. We'll try and win every game and see where it gets us. But on top of that, it's really important for us to build on our playing style. And I think for us to be successful as a club going forward, for us to ultimately get back to Premier League football someday, we believe that our playing style is going to be a big part of that. One, in terms of winning games, but also in terms of developing and improving our players, also in terms of recruiting and bringing better players to the football club. Having a positive playing style will be a big part of that. So, we're going to try and win every game, but also I think there's a medium and longer term piece of, continuing to build our playing style in this division. We think that will be a big part of, hopefully what can help us get to the Premier League.
I'm just going to get people up to speed, right? So if you're watching this podcast or listen to it, there are two distinct differences, of course. One you can see with your eyes, the other one you can hear. What Kieran's doing so well is ignoring Gary Weaver, putting his little finger up to say, can I ask a question next, please?
Can I ask a question, Mr. McKenna?
So well, Kieran, well done for blanking that so far. I know it's very, very disconcerting, but funny enough, Gary Weaver's got a question for you.
I was going to scream. Look, Kieran, I was just going to ask you again. I'm going back to who I spoke to last week, which was Russell Martin, the Southampton manager. And he's of the opinion, Russell, that he obviously wants to play out from the back. So do you. I know you're not exactly the same in terms of your styles, but he thinks that sometimes he can come in for some unfair criticism when it doesn't work properly and, it gets pounced upon and mistakes can happen doing that. I know you didn't concede the goal, by the way, from playing out from the back in terms of making a mistake last season. But do you understand where Russell's coming from? And have you had to convince even players at times that, this is the way we want to play and it works?
Yeah, there is, of course, a bit of convincing. I think that's part of the job of the manager. You need to convince, players, supporters, people in and around the club that, the way that you're going to go and play is a way that's going to help the club be successful. But I think players is possibly the easiest of those categories. I think more and more so now, modern players are so not educated is the wrong word, but interested tactically and in, the philosophy of how the team will play and, what will be expected of them in every phase and every moment on and off the ball. And, the success of big teams, of course, filters down and they watch football and they see how teams, the most successful teams in England have played in recent years and they want to be part of a team that plays like that. They want to develop themselves in that type of team. So I think from, as a manager, convincing players to play in a positive style is one of the easiest challenges, to be honest. I think they enjoy it more. They feel that they develop better in that type of system and they get a chance to showcase their talents more. I think, of course, supporters and other stakeholders, you have to, you have to educate at times and try and communicate well why you're doing certain things. And we've done that and tried to do that over the last 18 months and try and do that every week, to be honest, speak to the supporters about, things tactically and why certain things happened, why we thought things happened and, why we're doing certain things. So that's part of the process. And of course, results help, when you win in that style, it's a lot easier to get the buy-in. And I think the supporters at the moment, and from the start really, have been really, really good. But I think the more that you win and the more that they see the fruits of the labour, then the more that they get behind it. And as you say, it's certainly a lot easier when a team does concede a goal or does, you know, concede a big chance from, you know, building from the back, for example. Whereas the, you know, the chances of the goals that you concede from maybe not playing bravely and from giving the ball away cheaply or kicking the ball back to the opponent or from going longer and losing the second ball and then they break through the pitch and score, that isn't so obvious. The goal that you concede maybe from building up is really obvious, and it's easy for, you know, anyone to watch the highlight show and say that was the problem. but again, I think that's why, you
everyone's
know,
an expert most, though, Kieran, aren't they? Come on.
Knows exactly, you know, you guys on TV showing the highlights.
And, yeah.
Whoa. We only do it in its entirety. Highlights have nothing to do with me.
Exactly. I've not seen a nice bounce pass out from the back make the highlight reel yet.
It will now. Yeah,
more passages of play in the highlights as well.
I could just imagine Weaver's next commentary when it's Ipswich. Can we just get that on a super slow mode, please? Bouncing. Yeah, I tell you what does make me think about that when we talk about the coverage. I mean, the Ipswich-Norwich game, I mean, they're always cracking games. We've got that one back. We covered Norwich at the weekend. They were very impressive against Millwall at home. Mm-hmm. So I think, Just to pick Gary's brain here for just a quick second, Kieran. I mean, stylistically, I mean, that's an absolute mouthwaterer of a fixture, isn't it? These two going up against each other.
I've done a few of them, and obviously, when you're not from there, I'm from Liverpool, but you know, you obviously do your research, you speak to people around it, and when you go to that game for the first time, I think my first one was at Portman Road. It's unbelievable. I mean, Portman Road anyway, obviously, Kieran, you've seen when it's packed and the stands are so close to the pitch and, you know, when you come out the train station in Ipswich, it's rising up in front of you. You know, it's a wonderful place to go anyway. But when it's Ipswich Norwich, as I say, outsiders who aren't aware, as soon as you step into the stadium on that day, you know exactly what it's about.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. And yeah, people don't take too long to remind you of it. And etched in the memory at the moment. So yeah, it should be a great fixture.
Going along that, being reminded, it's part of being an Ipswich Town manager that we've discussed before, Kieran, about history, heritage, tradition, big names that have wandered the same corridors. Akin, possibly, and it's not a straight line, obviously, when you compare football clubs, but Steve Cooper going in at Nottingham Forest and saying, yeah, I don't mind it. I understand where it comes from. I understand what it's built on, and I'll embrace that. You seem to have gone kind of down the same route, and you've always appeared to me to be comfortable enough in how you do your job to know that Ipswich is big because of other people, but your responsibility is to make it big again and to step forward into that and embrace it.
Yeah, I think certainly. Look, you know, we were getting 30,000 attendances almost in League One. I was very clear to say that. That isn't because of me or because of what the players do at the moment. The reason why there's so many people who have a passion and love for the club is because of the history of the club and the achievements that have gone on before. And then that passes down from the generation, and you get a new generation who love the club because their parents love the club and educated them about the great teams that came before us. So, You have to embrace it. You know, certainly I almost think it's a case of why would you not, you know, to have that fantastic history, to have in my position to be following behind, you know, some of the best managers the country has ever seen. That should be something that makes us proud. We know that, you know, we have to build on that history and build our own history. But it's something that, you know, we try and relate to as much as we can. And to give the supporters a promotion party and them scenes that Ipswich hadn't seen for, you know, 20 plus years was great. And it's something that we referred to a lot with the players. And I think they really enjoy taking up that mantle of being, you know, trying to be a team that now gives the, you know, the new generation of Ipswich supporters some memories to enjoy and some things to celebrate, like their parents or, you know, the people who introduced them to the club like they had before us. And I think the other thing as well is, you know, it's such a nice area to live that you have so many of the ex-players in. You have so many, you know, still in the area who come to the game, who are around it. And I think, you know, they've been great with me, and the club have done a really good job of, you know, trying to re-engage, you know, those. Because I think if you have, you know, legends of the club around the area and they're not feeling involved or respected, then, you know, that's never a good start point. So they've been really supportive, the Ex-Players Association, and we've tried to engage with them as a club, and I think that hopefully is another part of sort of bringing the new generation and the new players and the new squad and the new staff, you know, hopefully a little bit closer to those who have achieved before us.
Great that you embraced that, Kieran, because I know obviously some clubs that wouldn't. I was going to ask you about Lee Grant, the inevitable question about Lee Grant. Yeah. Obviously, goalkeeper appointed Ipswich coach, you think goalkeeping coach, but he is working with the strikers, isn't he? And if he is, I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it? Because I'm assuming he can tell strikers and the finishes that goalkeepers can't get to or find awkward. I'm assuming that's what's behind it, is it?
Yeah, that's a part of it. And that's, of course, you know, one component that he can give a different insight into. There's a few different points to that, you know, appointment, really. I think one, Lee Grant was, you know, everyone who's played with him and been in dressing with him, and know he's a fantastic professional. We worked with him at Man United, and he was in that phase where he was starting to, you know, want to move into the coaching side of it. And I always knew that he wanted to go down the, you know, first team coach and managerial route eventually. So I was speaking to him for years, really, about how he could make that process. And he was always someone who I wanted to bring on board in some guise, if possible. And I think that the big piece beyond that, you know, maybe people wouldn't understand as much, is that when you look at how goalkeepers work, you know, so much of it is in a small group in the goalkeepers union with 3, 4, 5 players, and they're working in the penalty area on repetition, on details, on angles, on what, you know, contacts, on spin on the ball, all these things. And you know, since I started coaching, really, I've always liked to chunk things down, you know, positionally, and do a lot of unit work and do a lot of individual work and try and make, you know, training as position specific as possible. And I thought that was just a really good link, really, because, you know, you can see when you see Lee working with the forwards, you can see how natural it is for him. One, he's got a really good personality for a coach, but two, that's the environment that he's been working in for the last 20 years, small groups. I really think he's built a forwards union here. They enjoy competing against each other. They enjoy the details. They enjoy trying to get better. And it probably is, you know, really similar to a little group of goalkeepers he's been working in. And I think that's the other part of it, the similarity of how them positions train, how I want those positions to train, is really, really, really key. And then when I spoke to him about it, it was, look, he's been, you know, on the other side of, you know, Cristiano, Marcus Rashford, Romelu, you know, Alexis Sanchez, Martial, from some fantastic finishers. And I think as the backup goalkeeper, which he was at United, you're the one who's facing the front
peppered. Top.
Yeah, exactly. Peppered. Absolutely peppered for 30 minutes every day with, Bruno's hitting free kicks and you know, working. And he's been right in and amongst that, which to me then is a lot more specific than, oh, because you've been a goalkeeper, go and take the defenders because they're beside you.
Yeah.
So much of certainly his later career has been around some of the world's best forwards. So, yeah, there was some logic in it.
That's brilliant.
He's done great. As I have to say, all my coaches have been fantastic, and we do an incredible, I think, amount of individual work, of unit work, of feedback, and trying to get the players better. And you know, Lee and Martin, Charlie and Rennie have been a massive part of that. And I think the players would be the first to testament their work and how it's helped them all individually push on.
If I can just draw a broadcasting analogy for you, Kieran, I mean, commentators are like goalkeepers. I mean, do I need to explain more there, or do you know exactly what I mean? They're all of their own.
Not that bad, Kieran.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Yeah, we sit in the room on our own.
That's such a nice way to put. That's why you're such a good leader of men. Very diplomatic. Yeah. They're just a little bit different, and they're absolutely right. Kieran, you've given us
more of the presenter.
I was going to say, hang on a minute.
Put it all together.
They're the prima donnas at the top. That holiday in places like I am right now, which we're not going to go into. Chaps, this has been a pleasure. I mean, Kieran, thank you so much for your time. I've used this term so many times over the course of the podcast. This week is so far so good, and Ipswich have been a wonderful addition back into the Championship, and we wish you all the very best between now and the end of the season.
No, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers, Kieran. Good luck.
Gary, before you go, again,
not only
my colleague, my co-host this time around, it's nothing. I'm just saying, isn't it a pleasure that we get the privilege of speaking to people like Kieran,
brilliant.
Proper football people doing a wonderful job.
Insight. Yeah, fantastic insight. Fantastic insight. And Kieran, good luck for the season, buddy. Hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Gary.
A fascinating insight there into the minds of both managers and commentators. I'm sure you will agree. A big thank you for this week's episode. The people joining me, of course, were Kieran McKenna, John Coleman and Gary Weaver. That's about it for this week. A big thank you to everybody for listening. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on all of your socials if you'd like to get in touch. And please do, we read them all. The address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is David Prutton. And I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast. Bye for now.